You've heard us this week speak about Trump derangement syndrome. His backers define it as his critics suffering such distress over Donald Trump that they are being irrational with little regard to his actual positions. The phrase itself, though, comes from someone who is not a fan of Donald Trump, the late conservative commentator Charles Krauthammer, who first used it as Bush derangement syndrome in 2003, defining it then as the acute onset of paranoia in otherwise normal people in reaction to Bush policies, nay, he wrote, in reaction to his very existence. Well, he revised that to Trump derangement syndrome, a Trump-induced general hysteria producing an inability to distinguish between policy difference and signs of psychic pathology in the president. Andrew Bacevich, a retired Army colonel and military analyst, and like Krauthammer, no admirer of Trump, might agree. He joins us now by Skype. Andrew, hello.
Hello.
So you write about this in an op-ed for the Boston Globe this week. I want to start where you start, which is back much further than Krauthammer in 2003. You all go all the way back to 1964 and Richard Hofstadter's wonderful essay, The Paranoid Style in American Politics. Remind us why he wrote that. The context then was Goldwater, the candidate for president.
Yes. And the point of Professor Hofstadter's essay was that we have a penchant for this. We have a penchant for the paranoid style. It occurs periodically in our politics, and it has a tremendously distorting effect. And I think that in some respects, we are experiencing a similar phenomenon right now. I have to say, I was not familiar with Krauthammer's essay, and I think he said what I was trying to say much better than I said it.
Well, we'll get to what you want to say about this, but I just want to stay with Hofstadter for a second because you sent me back to his writing. You said it's become something akin to essential reading again today, The Paranoid Style in American Politics. We'll link you to a reprinting of some of it in Harper's. There was a 300-page book. But it begins with him saying, American politics has often been an arena for angry minds. In recent years, we've seen angry minds at work mainly among extreme right-wingers who've now demonstrated in the Goldwater movement how much political leverage can be got out of the animosities and passions of a small minority. And he goes on to talk about, you know, the right at that time. That's pretty much what you're remembering, too.
It is, I believe, anger on the right, not confined to a small minority, anger on the right that led to the election of Donald Trump. The focus of my essay was to suggest that now that Trump is president, that has induced a paranoid response on the left among Trump's critics. Now, some people are going to object to the use of the term paranoid. I was only using it in the way that Professor Hofstadter did.
Well, but you go on to say, induce this paranoid response, one that, unless curbed, may well pose a greater danger to the country than Trump himself. Make that case.
Well, I mean, Trump has certainly distorted our politics in ways that I certainly don't approve of. But I fear that this obsessive response to Trump deepens that distortion, and that the events of the past couple of weeks, the G7, the NATO summit, the Helsinki summit, all illustrate this problem.
Yeah. So you're saying that there's an overreaction, and some could say, you look at CNN, there's very few things other than President Trump. But on the other hand, we in the press could say, well, wait a second, you have a president who says things like, no, I didn't say that about Theresa May of Britain, when in fact he did, or says, no, I didn't say I don't think Russia was involved in our elections, when in fact he did say that. What are we to do with that? Not cover it?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that at all. I mean, so much of what the president says is utter nonsense, and it's important to call him on it. But I think it's also necessary to think about what happens next. So we have a president who makes all of these extraordinary statements about NATO, suggesting that the United States is about to withdraw from NATO, that the whole alliance system is going to collapse. And then lo and behold, that doesn't happen. So, yes, we should take cognizance of the idiotic things that he says, but I think it's equally important to recognize that much of what he says actually doesn't end up producing any substantive change. Well, we're still in NATO. There still are sanctions on the Russians for their annexation of the Crimea. The G7 is still up and running. I'm not defending the president. I think his statements are beyond counterproductive, but it doesn't mean the end of the world.
Well, you also point out that even though people were very fearful of Trump's revival of America First and what seemed like isolationism, there are still U.S. troops deployed to Afghanistan, Syria, Iraq, other places around the world. And we always point out that you lost a son in service in Iraq. So this is something obviously very important to you.
But, well, if I may, that is an excellent illustration of the problem. So we have a president who embarrasses us, but we also have an approach to policy, one that predates Trump, that Trump, despite what he promised to do as a candidate, is in fact affirming. And I refer here to our endless wars. And I would argue that that is a far greater scandal than anything that happened at Helsinki, that what members of the press ought to be grabbing onto with the same sort of fierceness that they grab onto his stupid remarks is, how can it possibly be that we are lodged in this condition of permanent war? That's what people should be writing about, talking about, arguing about every day, not Trump's latest mishap.
Yeah.
I find it inexplicable that so many people voted for Trump. But the complaints that led so many people to vote for Trump are legitimate complaints. And that's where the attention of our political system, of our media, ought to be, on those grievances.
And resist 24/7 coverage, even though it's extraordinarily important, of families separated at the border, or his seeming embrace of white nationalists in a rally, or talking about immigration changing the fabric of Europe. I mean, it goes on, and you're saying pay attention to, you know, try to shift your gaze elsewhere, including...
Well, no, I mean, what I'm saying is pay attention to more than Trump. I mean, somebody sent me a note and said, you know, the American people have very limited bandwidth when it comes to public affairs. And it seems to me that we are allowing Trump to suck up more of that bandwidth than he deserves.
One of the problems you mentioned that might have paved the way for his election, radical changes in the nation's moral landscape. I know what I think you meant by that, but what did you mean by that?
What I mean is that our culture is moving rapidly in a direction away from what we might call traditional norms derived from our Judeo-Christian religious traditions. And a lot of people think that that's fine, necessary. But I think it's fair to recognize that there are quite a number of our fellow citizens who are uneasy with these changes. We're never going to go back to the 1950s. We shouldn't go back to the 1950s. But it seems necessary, if we're ever going to bring the country back together again, to at least acknowledge that people whose values derive from the 1950s at least deserve a certain hearing, a certain amount of respect. And I think that, again, is one of those issues that demands a heck of a lot more attention than the president's latest gaffe.
Right. And just to be clear, you're not saying gays and lesbians should wait, just as some people thought that blacks should wait in the 60s. It's not time yet. You're not saying that. You're saying the people who find this frightening, this what is very swift in historical times, not fast enough for a lot of people, but in historical times it is swift. You're saying that there somehow should be some more understanding and compassion towards people who are finding this moving quickly.
You just said it much better than I did.
Well, because it sounds like you're saying if Americans don't help their fellow Americans with that, then someone will take advantage of their pain.
As Trump did, and as potentially other Trumps will.
That's military analyst Andrew Bacevich, always thought-provoking. Andrew, thanks so much.
Thank you.